cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to Leadership Transformation Platform, transforming towards an empowered society. Absolutely fantastic to be with you, and I look forward to introducing our guests with me as always, the old man Louis Groenewald. Welcome, Louis.
It's great to be here. I'm looking forward to another authentic leadership discussion.
Yeah, and of course, when it's in the rugby domain, you just perk up, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Himself, when you speak to Louis' brothers, and he grew up in a home with 10 kids, six brothers, they all say he could have been a Springbok, he was so good, but he doesn't play that up, he plays it down. So yeah, we're in the right domain, that's the conversation today. For all things leadership, go to leadershipplatform.com, two P's in the middle, but one word. And this is our Leadership Masterclass for the next hour, the first half hour. And in fact, today is just going to be an hour Leadership Masterclass. We're not going to break it up in anything. And we've got two great men in the studio, Jacques van Rienen and Werner Janse van Rensburg, also known as Scully. You can tell us if we need to call you that. But why are they here? That's a big question. Why is Jacques and Werner with us here? In fact, we're sitting in a quiet office pre-recording, and this will go out live. It's fantastic to sit with them, and I have a bit of background. It's because we've got the head coach of UJ rugby team. Okay, that's Varsity Cup stuff, and that seems to be more prominent these days. And he brought in Jacques van Rienen, who's a businessman, a leader, and he's migrated towards becoming a life coach. And it seems this combination of a talented coach with another talented leader and life coach behind him and with him may have made a huge difference to this UJ team. Now, let's just quickly introduce or welcome them, and then I want them to tell us just exactly the difference over the last 2-3 years. Welcome, gentlemen. It's good to have you with us. Mic's close.
Thanks,
Arden. Yeah, thanks.
Wonderful to be here.
Good to be here.
So quickly tell me, so 3-4 years ago, when you started in the beginning stages or before, UJ wasn't doing so great. I think they were very low on the log, maybe the lowest they've been in a long time. Just tell me where they were and then kind of where you're hovering at the moment, Werner.
Yeah, thanks, Arden. Look, when I took over, our first season didn't necessarily go that well for various reasons. We lost quite a lot of players, and it was a transition phase, as it usually is with change of coaches. And me being a first-time head coach on that level, kind of had to identify very early about what's going to be the critical things for me to take the ship ahead. And year one, I learned quite a lot of lessons, but the big thing that stood out for me was...
Before you go into the lessons, just tell me where the team was.
We're
going to go to the lessons now.
Well, you're creating some nightmares here now again, but we'll go back in history. So first round for me was I walked straight into Varsity Cup being a 30-year-old head coach, the youngest at that stage. And we ended seventh. We actually, for the first time in history, had to play promotion relegation, which didn't hit well at home, but we managed to survive that. And I went on from there.
Okay, so that was a real low, which is fabulous. And now if we look at last year and this year, where are you guys? And where did you end last year?
Yeah, so last year we made the semifinals. We ended second on the log and unfortunately lost our home semifinal. It wasn't how we scripted it, but it was still a great occasion for us because we took 21 individuals to a first-time semi-final on that level. So
fantastic.
So it was still a good day, yeah.
And this year, you didn't start the best, but there's reasons for it. But then you just turned it around, and right now you're contending. You're on track.
Yeah. We don't look too far ahead. Tomorrow is a different day, but yeah, as is now, if we do well tomorrow, we're definitely on track. This group was different. It was a bunch of youngsters that had to come and understand our culture, our program that we put together, the way we work with them, and ultimately what we want out of them as individuals. And having a short time frame in transition from end of November to starting the competition 30 January, it's not a lot of time together.
Yeah.
And naturally, because you don't play much before that, you're going to learn some lessons early on in the competition. Yeah, and we're grateful that that the group of youngsters kind of stick together.
Okay, so if everyone gets that, Jacques, do you want to add to that? That's where it kind of started. You got involved a year or two ago, and right now there's huge movement. If you're thinking 3-4 years from really bottom of the barrel, lowest you've been in a long time as a Varsity team, to being in the top three, hovering there, you know?
Yes, correct. So just after the Varsity Cup in 2015, so around about April 2015, through a very good friend of mine, Philip Lemmer, I was introduced to the team and first of all to Werner, and I had this wonderful opportunity to work with the team, and that's where my little journey started with the UJ Varsity Cup team.
Yeah, and I know when you talk about it, you're passionate. It's a wonderful experience. All right, Jen, so we'll come right back to you, Werner. And why Scully? Is that just a bynom from young?
Well, we just met, so I don't know why you want to take this. But it's Stud from Varsity. I've actually spent my journey there from 2001 at the same institution. And it came from Varsity down to the Rezen, Corsairs and Dachais days and so on. So, but we'll chat about it. What the
we'll go with Werner. Jacques, let's say you're a businessman. Okay, there was a time when you worked for a boss and you decided to become a businessman. You also lead in a voluntary organization with thousands of people that you must inspire from a shall we say church setup, which takes you to other countries, even Madagascar. You just flew in from Madagascar today, and then you decided to start dabbling in the coaching arena a few years ago. Did some program courses. So I found that very interesting. Employee, own business, own pains and everything there. There's a spiritual strong component, which is voluntary, totally different environment. A clear direction of coaching, not just saying, okay, I want to start coaching, which you obviously have been doing in your formal careers as well, but you formalize the coaching component by doing international programs. And here you are sitting with us today. So I want us to unpack that just a little bit. First, businessman. What business are you in? Tell us quickly.
So we supply the granite industry or the stone processing industry with tools. We're a one-stop shop. And so that's pretty much what we do. And that business has been running for just over 20 years now.
Okay. And so 20 years ago, or just before 20 years ago, 21 years ago, let's say,
right.
You were an employee.
Correct.
And then you decided to jump. Why did you do that? It's a big step.
Well, I think that it was always something that I wanted to do. I always wanted to have my own business. I think that, when we are younger, we obviously look up to those who give us opportunities and we learn and we grow. But I think quietly I always had that aspiration to lead and to have my own business, to do my own thing. And I think more obviously financially driven, that decision, but I think more than the finances, I think just the freedom of time that I was after, specifically at that time to be with my family, which I had wonderful time over the years to spend time with my family next to the sport field in extramural activities and just to be with them.
And this is proof here today. You wouldn't be able to be involved with the UJ team, for example, if you didn't have your own business. Probably not. But let's be honest here. Has it all been plain sailing? 20 years, I know better. You know, in 20 years, it's not just plain sailing. Tell us, has it been easy?
Well, not at all, and I could keep you busy the whole night, but certainly not. I think, around 2008, when many businesses were under huge strain, we also took a lot of strain. And
that was when banking industry went crashing.
Exactly. And so during this period, we also had very tough times that we faced. And, obviously, more than before, I had to take leadership, that leadership role. I had to take the lead in my own company to keep it stable and to keep it moving forward. And so, obviously, we're sitting here now. The business is doing well. We've been blessed. Obviously, it's been a lot of hard work and commitment. But definitely through that period of time, the authentic leadership we often talk about was something that I had to apply, that I had to actually exercise in my own life and in our business.
And you say it so quickly, but I also have a little bit of personal experience. Louis, when you say you had to take the leadership, when you run your own small, medium business, that leadership is personal pain. It's selling your, putting your house on mortgage, or it's selling all the luxuries you have, or it's not easy. You've got to bring cash flow back into the business, and you regress financially so that you can progress again. Is that right? And you've gone through all those pains.
Exactly, that's true. During this time, we had to dip into our personal finances, and I'm proud to say that because I think a lot of business owners these days are too quick to just pass the buck and just to say, well, I can't and I don't have the money.
Sequestrate or whatever.
Exactly. But we chose the hard route. To some, it might seem crazy, but during this time, we did not retrench anyone. We didn't go on short day weeks. And those are definitely blessings, but they were fruits, definitely fruits of our labor. And we all, as a business, we all pulled together. And of course, we know that the leadership is top driven.
Okay, so we'll come back to Vanna in a moment. One or two more questions that I'm interested in. So one or two hard lessons you learned in that period that maybe pops into your mind. Because that is ultimately when we grow, when we leave our comfort zone. That's ultimately when we learn most of our lessons. And especially whether we are authentic or not as a leader and as a human being in difficult times. I've seen the worst in people come out when finances are really low, when the pressure is high. So do you have one or two lessons that you want to share with business owners, business leaders out there?
Yeah, I think that humility is definitely something that that comes to mind, something that is very, I feel, very important for any leader, is to show humility. And when I say that, I mean toward all people, including your own employees. Sometimes you need to be open and honest with them about certain things, and that's exactly what I did. I was open toward them about the economic state, and particularly at that stage the economic positioning of the business and the pressures that we were facing. And so I think that went a long way, because people, the employees, they could see that, you know, that I was genuine and that there were no hidden agendas. And I think what that did was it helped me to get the best out of them, because they realized that we were all in this together. So it wasn't like there was only one or two of us. We were all in this together, and we all made certain sacrifices, whether it be time or financial. And so that was definitely one of the qualities, if you like, that that had to come to the fore, that I had to apply in my own life, was the humility. And and then of course to take that leadership role, to take the full responsibility, and then accountability. I think that's something else that we sometimes as leaders of businesses don't pay too much attention to, is to take that responsibility and be accountable for choices and decisions that you've made, and then run with it.
Louis, you want to come in here?
Yeah. Werner, we've over the years had relationships with hundreds of top performers and leaders. You mentioned it. We've probably seen them, written about them, hundreds of articles, etc. And there are very few that I can think about now of real authentic leaders. They had that kind of character that we're speaking about here, that didn't go through very difficult times. We're not saying you must of necessity do that, but that's where character comes from. That's where a person gets small when other people are just melting away. Did you know that he also ran a martial arts school?
Yeah, look, it was funny. That's how we actually met in a way, because he got involved with Andrew van Sail and Philip in the wrestling, and heard that quickly. I was quite shocked. Monday morning was just a week in our system, and suddenly he was teaching some or other wrestling moves in our gym. And I was worried, who did we pull in here? You know? So, So he's a.
No, but what we do, I've known him for years in different capacities, and the one golden thread was this solid, humble commitment to values. I think he said you're the same kind of person as well. Mm. And that's when you start speaking of authentic leadership.
Okay, so before we go the coaching route, just one other question, and then I want to know from you why you went the coaching route. I mean, successful business. But your leadership in a voluntary organization, you lead people there that are not being paid, where it needs a different level of commitment. What is different for you leading in a business versus leading and needing to inspire thousands of people who are not being paid? It's all voluntary.
Well, Adrian, I quite honestly don't think that there is much or any difference. I think that when we think of and speak of authentic leadership, I firmly believe that you are, and you should be, the same in virtually all situations. Now, I understand that, you know, we show our even softer side with our family, and so there we let our guard down a little. Perhaps not exactly how we will be in the public eye, but I think to come back to, you know, the business arena versus life coaching, I don't believe that anyone would sit with a leadership coach and accept them as their mentor or as their leadership coach if they have not been able to produce the goods or deliver, especially when it comes to the business side of things. So obviously credentials, that definitely, you know, has a part and a role to play. But I think that it's really the same. The hats essentially are the same. You're the same person. You can't act or pretend to be something or someone that you are not in the one arena compared to the other.
So this hard, tough guy at in my business, and I hire and fire and go crazy. But then when I go walk into the church environment, I'm this nice, kind, gentle soul. You're saying, no, hold on, there's something wrong. Indeed. I'm not authentic then.
Absolutely, correct. You should be the same all the time. In fact, Scully mentioned the martial arts studio. I think there as well, humility on the wrestling mat, on the jiu-jitsu mat, in the mixed martial arts arena. We know that we have some tough guys out there, and I've had the privilege to rub shoulders with many of these really well-rounded mixed martial artists who are competing at the highest levels. And there, I think especially, it's easy to have your ego get ahead of you. But again, there you can, and I feel strongly that I've proven this, that you can even there show humility and allow some newcomers perhaps to, you know, to try a new move and to make him feel good about it, things like that.
Okay, Jacques, so final question, then we bring Scully in. I want to know about his background before we look at your case study here of taking the UJ varsity team from 7th on the log 3-4 years ago to now being 2nd, 3rd, hovering around there and looking really good. I watched them play. Man, they offload that ball. I tell you, Van, like the All Blacks. I was watching some of it with... honestly, that's the first thing I said was flipping the Springboks don't offload the ball like that. There's always a man behind them. I really enjoyed what I saw there. But before we go there, mixed martial arts, what's the background? I know you have background there. How intense was that? How intensely did you get involved in that sport? Of course, I also did karate, which is not mixed martial arts, but I have respect for that field.
Yeah, so I did karate also from a very young age. Got a first dan black belt and then was introduced to mixed martial arts and realized that really that was the way to go because it's really the ultimate in fighting and defending yourself. And so I became proficient in that. And again, they also rubbed shoulders with many great athletes, great coaches who also had a wonderful positive influence and impact in my life as a sportsman.
Mm. So in the olden day rugby game, you know, he could have taught, you know, they say if you start to lose the match, then, you know, you must win the fight. In the very old days, you know, we grew up as youngsters. So he could have helped there as well, but that's not going to help right now. Why did you go the coaching route? You're a businessman, you're involved in voluntary and so on and so forth, and then suddenly, maybe not suddenly, you decide to do serious life coaching programs, courses, internationally affiliated, to go into life coaching. Why?
That's quite simple. I love people, and in saying that, I have to define that. I love to see people succeed. I love to see people grow and develop, and I wouldn't be true to myself and to my values also if I just sat here and took all the glory, because that's not what it is. I believe that we have here with us today a wonderful coach, and certainly I would like to believe that I've had some role to play in some of the successes we've enjoyed. Not that we've arrived or that we've really achieved anything too great, but there's certainly been some movement in the right direction, and we hope that we'll get the results. But first of all, I need to just, you know, mention that and make that statement that, you know, as a humble leader, which I think is very important, I think we need to acknowledge that. And then again, to come back to your original question, I just love people and to work with people and to see how I can, through my own life experiences and through the value system that I live and the things that I've learned over the years, how I can apply and help others in their lives to improve.
Mm. Okay, Werner. Janssen van Gitsnou, wil ek sê Rensburg, né?
Welke?
Ja, sê. Werner Janssen van Rensburg, the head coach of the UJ varsity team, rugby team. Werner, let's just look at your background. You studied, what did you study?
Yeah, so I started studied at the same institution, but way back when it was still RAU. But I went through the transition there with my honours degree in sports science. Initially started, still had the passion. I was a sport guy, both in cricket and rugby, but still had this passion for, believe it or not, sport journalism. And so I studied a sport communication degree with my journalism being a main subject with human movement studies. And somehow along the way, they finished that off, but that, I don't know why, lost me a bit along the way, and then it went over to an honours in sports science, and before I knew it, I ended up in the sport bureau at what then was formed as UJ, and one thing led to another. Started coaching as a 20-year-old, and yeah, before you know it, my roots was in there.
So you coached at school level, high school level, the first team of school?
It was Maref Lune, yeah.
Okay, so you've coached there? And then jumped over to UJ.
Yeah, I actually did both at one stage. I started my initial career with being on a 19B coach at RAU back then, and then went into teaching. It was a weird circle of life for me, but I just realized that, I don't want to echo Jock, but I found myself being a little bit more passionate about just being around the players and being around the kids. So ended up in teaching and as a sport manager there. And then at one stage for about 7 years, I did both. I coached in the evenings at the university and then coached at school and then also coached the provincial sides for the union. So it was a nice balancing act at one stage. But if you're involved with what you want to be, then you manage it.
Okay, now quickly, the difference between coaching at high school, it's quite competitive there these days, I must say, versus then UJ rugby team. Well, how would you describe just the difference before we move on?
Yeah, look, I guess the individuals differ a little bit. So with the kids, if you want to go technical about it, I think the first thing is a lot more basic about their approach. And for me, just setting a cornerstone for them, why they're playing. I think we've lost that a little bit in the country, to be honest. Our why at high school level now is why, because I can maybe get a provincial contract, or why this can maybe become my life.
It's too serious, too young.
Yeah, we've made it way too professional. I'm grateful for young, good players that come through to our system as well. But we tend to, at 19, 20-year-old, lose the passion of some of those kids because they got driven from 14 years old already to win a trophy. So for me, a balancing act there was just to understand that why we're playing. We've got goals for the school as well, but you're playing that because you love the game. As you move on to the university guys, they get a little bit more serious about it because realistically they can start to form the base of maybe having a provincial career. So you form an individual a little bit more there than necessarily doing the technical side.
But even there, it's a tough one, eh? They often have to choose between their studies and their... Are we finding that balance at a university level? Where, I mean, my brother-in-law played for Rao at that stage when Francois Pinault was in the first team. So he was the prop. Francois. He was also a Francois. But somewhere he had to choose between studying to become an optometrist or playing. Can we honestly find that balance now, that I can actually complete my professional degree and play seriously for UJ first team?
Yeah, I think currently we're probably at the best place of finding that balance. I'm not sure that it was like that in the previous 5 to 8 years. It's what made Varsity Cup special for these guys, because the whole cornerstone of the competition was based on getting through this competition with a degree and having something at the end of it. So, look, we've come to realize that ultimately investing in the individuals, you need to have the balance of both. The reality is as follows, and that's what we base our values onto the guys, is that there'll maybe be in this whole province 1% of these guys that will ultimately have a 10 to 12 year provincial degree. So I think, to be honest, the decision is very easy for the guys now. You've got to realize that that's the reality of making it your career. So where guys who really put the shoulder to it and get their degree within that 3 to 4 years, they move on from Varsity Cup at 23. And if they manage it well, they still got a 10-year opportunity to maybe go and even do it elsewhere. Not necessarily in the province that they were, but do it elsewhere and then come back and start their career. So I think at this stage, look, if you ask a lot of people out there, we can probably balance it even more. But I do feel we're getting the balance far better.
Okay. Vanner, why did you bring someone like Jacques into your team?
Yeah, for me it was quite easy. I did look for a specific individual. Us being a young coaching staff at that stage, in my second year, I was turning 31. The two assistant coaches was turning 30 years old. All played and had roots in the same institution, but not necessarily coached at that level. We coached at provincial schools level, but it was just way more different than what Varsity Cup provided us. And we worked with between 19-year-olds and 23-year-old guys. And for me, the choosing of the individual was easy because I felt we lacked a little bit of mentorship. For me, being at 30 years of age, there's certain advice that I could give those guys. We came up with the principle that if we're better people and players away from the field, we'll be better people and players on the field. And we formed that as our base for the whole culture. And that's where Jock came in. And I wanted an individual that, I know Jock looks 32 years of age still today, but yeah. I wanted an individual at that stage who was just a little bit older, a little bit more around the block, and to be honest, who had kids who's already been through school and maybe at varsity, and with his background, obviously a little bit of a business background and understanding disappointments, etc., because we needed that individual, and a 19-year-old kid automatically addresses him with that form of respect and understanding his opinion and taking value of it. So yeah, we needed someone just to, if I could put it as blatant as that, who just been a little bit around the block, a little bit more of life. Yeah.
Let's embarrass him for a moment. The more you get to know him, there's incredible balance around, isn't there? There's from spiritual to physical, and you have to have the respect of these guys from physical level, I think, to business maturity, to life. There's a trust. So there's, I can see why. You know, he's not just a one level guy.
You see, that was the balance we had to find with him, because it's one thing motivating these kids is very easy because they've got the opportunity to play this immense great sport. They arrive with a bursary maybe, and they've got on top of the world. But dealing with not being selected, dealing with the tragedy of life, maybe we had a lot of guys at that stage who, In the last 3 years, we've lost family members, who's gone through bad relationships, and Jock having the balance of a great spiritual life and having a successful full marriage and being a successful dad himself, just kind of knew how to touch base with them. And that was the most important factor for me, because I was looking for guys to be really happy off the field, because then we knew we could get a lot out of them on the field.
Okay, and I've lived in his house. He's what?
No, he's not that
good. All right, now, gentlemen, we've got a great head coach here for UJ rugby team, and then we've got a life coach who you guys then have a team around you. So we've got you in the studio. You have taken this team to new heights, and I understand tomorrow is a big match, tomorrow, Monday night. So on the day that this show will play live, you've got your big match against
Wits.
Who have their tail in the air.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, I mean, literally everything have to come together for a match to work, and that's what makes coaching so incredibly dynamic. But let's acknowledge, Louis, happy that you've done something good with this team. Even if you lose tomorrow, great movement. Let's look at some reasons why. What are some of the reasons why this team has gone from bottom of the log to being a contender for the log, be it this year, next year? They're up there. So I want us to list a couple of things, and then we can even unpack some of those couple of things for the next half hour, and then we can take it to real life. So we can take it away from the sports field perhaps even and see in business and life how we deal with that. Happy with that? Let's kick off with the first one. What would you say is one of the first things you've done maybe differently?
Yeah, look, I'm not too sure about a different approach, but what I can say that stood out from these guys is that when you've had that started, we had losing two games in a row. The one thing that it does come ahead is the fact that you almost pull closer to the guys around yourself, and you find yourself. You understand why you are there. And the moment you acknowledge the challenge, the guys after our second loss just pulled together and realized what the reason was that they were there. And ultimately acknowledging that there's a reality in sport and that you got to keep your tails in the air every week and be true to yourself, work hard every single day, and use that as your basis to go to the next match. So what totally stood out for us is that there's a different form of character that came to the fore. So we almost had to be knocked down to get the best out of that.
That's now starting this year.
Because
I find that fascinating. You often have the Springboks who maybe do well at a World Cup, and they come back into their provincial teams, and you think, well, they're going to boost the teams, but you don't see that. You almost see the teams, or a team wins the Curry Cup this year, and next year they just start bad. There's something psychological when you do brilliantly in a season. When you kick off the next season, you've got to humble yourselves, I guess, again, or do something. But that's insane. So you experience that.
Yeah, look, there was enough pressure I put on the guys. Ultimately, our immediate environment, you know, also weren't too happy with what was happening. But that's the fun part of what this team sport brings. We've now seen each other under pressure, but we've ultimately now seen the best of ourselves as well. And that's what you need. So we were in touch with what reality was, and ultimately some good character was formed now. And when the character meets some luck and ultimately meets some momentum, then you see the change that happened. So, for me, the big base was that understanding of who we are and why we are on the challenge, and ultimately acknowledging that we were knocked down, but we can still do that.
Jacques, come in here. Some things you would list that happened in this team to bring you to where you are.
Well, obviously for me, I have to take it back to 2015, just after the Varsity Cup, when I joined with Scully and the team. Just a wonderful, wonderful group of guys. And, we've been talking about leadership, and I just want to mention this one thing. We are all leaders in our own rights. And of course at different levels, yes, but we are all leaders, whether it be among your peers, whether it be a leader of a family, whether it be a leader as a coach, whether it be a leader of some great organization. And so I think what the idea was and has been since the start is, as Scully mentioned earlier on, that if you have a well-rounded, well-balanced leader / player / academic student off the field, then of course you can produce on the field as well. And so I think a lot had to be done and said, and we worked a lot over the past couple of months, well, actually more than a year, with individuals and also as a team, on taking responsibility for yourself, taking ownership. And then of course there were things discussed such as honesty and integrity, and every single one of us had to take responsibility for these things. And you know, sometimes you might see someone perhaps a little downtrodden, and you need to then take responsibility as a teammate to lift him up. And of course when I was in the team environment, and when I'm there with them, these are things I look out for, and they know now that they can just come to me, whether it be the coaches or the players. But it's just such a privilege to be able to be in that environment and to be able to speak openly about things that bring what we call mojo. And I think I shared with you a few things about mojo, so this is one of our buzzwords in the team, is that we have mojo, and it means many things, but perhaps we can explore that at another time.
Okay, I definitely want us to look at this mojo principle. Before we look at the mojo principle, Louis, you're taking notes there, the note taker, the old man in the studio with us. What are you picking up from these two gentlemen, the head coach, shall we say the life coach on the side?
What I am picking up, which always thrills me, is there is a simplicity that they both agree on. You can see it. They agree on authenticity. One concept, integrated person on and off the field, is a term many people use, but I get the impression these leaders are serious about that. You can only be as good a player as good a person you are, because rugby is very competitive. So the pressure is going to come, and you're going to fall under pressure if you haven't got the supporting character. There's no doubt about that. The same way, in terms of the expression you use, Werner, a different form of character. It's a lovely way of putting it, that you need character, not just words. You need to be able to draw upon yourself, that you know how you react. under pressure. That's why I mentioned it was Jacques' background, why I have an affinity for him, is because he has been under pressure in many fields, and let's face it, he's still there fighting in a noble way, relying on his faith and his integrity. So I like the way, Arjun, that they have a simplicity of a unity between them, which is great. See, that's authenticity. Mm. Or else you start clouding with words and political speak. And so I think these two try really to penetrate that.
Werner? Mm.
Yeah, look, I said to Jacques before, and we've always functioned on the principle that simplicity is the joy of life for us. You know, it doesn't matter in which environment, whether you started from the beginning or whether you are in the campaign. If you overthink things, that's usually when you make it even worse. It sounds very easy now. I mean, we just came from a training session where we withdrew two players who were sick for tomorrow's contest. But when you stand there, you know, there's a lot of things going through your mind. You think that guy can and this guy must. And ultimately, when you come back, somebody in the environment's got to say, listen, but we've got a principle, and our principle is that. So let's simplify things again and say, listen, we've trained with 45 guys in the preseason. Surely numbers 22 and 23 should now be the guys that should step in, and we should back the system that they can play.
Mm. Okay, so and maybe there's also technical issues that we can bring in, but let's just discover together this mojo principle. Where does that come from, Jacques? You did try and explain it to me back in George. Not try, you did. You showed me the bands. Just take us on that journey.
Well, yes. Of course, when we started working together, of course, I spoke of values, and I had to bring it all together and just find a word that would stand out, that everyone could relate to and that everyone understood. And of course, we were working with a young bunch of guys, and I think many of them and most of them at the time, you know, understood the principle. And then, of course, as I continued to build on this word, I started attaching values to it. I started attaching principles to it. And we would talk of having mojo or not having mojo. So if someone did something that wasn't particularly good off or on the field, then we would say, well, that wasn't mojo. And then, of course, if they did something well, then we would say that was really mojo. Or we would invite them to bring their mojo. Mm. And so the armbands or the wristbands we had made, and as I presented that, I said to the players and to the coaches that, and just to get clarity, the wristband reads "Got Mojo." So it has the word "got" just before the word mojo.
As if it's present. I've got it.
I've got it. And it's a statement. So I have it. I've got mojo. But then I also said to them, and the new latest wristbands that we had made, now I have a question mark as well. And there's also a heart on there and, of course, a rugby ball. But just on that, the question mark, obviously, is we all need to ask ourselves at times, do I really have it? Have I really got mojo?
Replace mojo with words, I guess. The one that pops into my mind is character.
Absolutely.
Did I have character on the field, or did I not? Or did I show character in that specific instance? Gee, you really showed character there, my friend. Or not? So I guess that could be one of the words that encapsulates the word mojo.
Well, absolutely. I think there are many words, and I think we'd like to get Scully to come in here as well, but something like patience. You know, if you have patience on the field, on the rugby field, patience is a virtue with the referee, with your teammates, just in general, off the field as well. Character, patience, we've mentioned, and then, of course, honesty, integrity, hard work. That could be mojo or not. If you haven't worked hard, if you haven't worked hard enough to be in that team, was that really mojo? So there are many, many words with great connotations that actually help us to link up to this value system that we really engender on and off the field. So it's not something that you only have on the field.
Mojo on the field, it's off the field.
Exactly right.
Mm. Look,
go for it.
I think the basis of that is, you can take it somewhere else if you want to as well, but I had the discussion this evening with the guys, and I think God Mojo is changing the perception of how you see yourself. The moment you look at the band a bit, and you say, but yes, I've got mojo, it suddenly changes a bit of your mindset, because there's someone else in the environment who said to me, but listen, we believe you've got it. That's why you're playing with us, and that's why we want to associate with you. So suddenly your perception changes. One thing Jock didn't mention there, that if you go onto the field, there's also an element of extraordinary skill. You spoke about the offloading and so on. That brings that little confidence, because it's not necessarily a thing that comes naturally. And you know, that's that example is something that might not work in the next game as well. It's just what it is. But having someone backing you and saying, listen, but you got that type of mojo, that's why you are here, gives you a little bit of that confidence under pressure to say, listen, but I can execute that pass. Mm-hmm. So for me, a big thing is just changing the perception of yourself within the environment.
Louis, I just want you to come in here. You see, the challenge I always have with coaches during halftime, maybe, or the captain on the field, the skipper taking them behind the poles, things are not going well. You need something to capture the emotion right there, and you can try and shout at them. But if you just say, guys, did we just show mojo in the last 5 minutes, or did we not? The guys would immediately know. Once it becomes a team culture, they know we didn't, and then their mind shifts into mojo mode. So it's a communication concept, isn't it?
The beauty about the mojo should not be underestimated. Every organization I know have worked out laboriously set of values. Every organization, they spent hundreds of thousands of rands in doing it. Very few people believe in them. You can't believe in 5-6 values. You can't. What matters is a deep feeling you have, a desire, a passion. And if you can't bring down the values into a simple feeling of belonging. This old story of this prince that was captured. I don't know if Jacques, you picked it up somewhere, and he'd taken some island by the enemies of the king, and they tried to corrupt this prince, to destroy him, and they took anything to corrupt him, and he kept on saying, I was born to be a king. Now what mojo does, tied it in here, the way you do it with sound values, is it brings out the best in you. So in a sense, you're not putting in something new, and this is a vital point. So it's simple again, but ultimately it's the feeling you have. Or else your pep talks becomes demotivational. The values on the wall become demotivated because you don't really believe it. But you can believe the concept of mojo if you have faith in the people who are pushing you, and they try their best to live the same mojo as well. I think it's a good concept.
Okay, so gentlemen, I just made notes here. Maybe it's not exactly, but writing down the things that you feel you may have done to bring the team to this level, pulling together after a loss. I liked what you said there, Vanet, about we've been with each other in the worst and in the best. And that's marriage. That's any worthwhile relationship has that. Be true to yourself, and I guess also as a team. Character meets luck. I like that statement, Jacques. That is rugby. I mean, you kick off the World Cup with your captain, and after one or two games, your captain is out. That's bad luck, you know. Mm-hmm. But now, will character maybe carry you a little bit until luck comes back? Mm-hmm. Well-balanced player on and off field, and taking ownership of yourself, your own values, what you believe in. The mojo principle, which, you know, it's taken you a while probably to get the team to really understand mojo, so we're not going to capture the essence of it maybe in 2-minute conversation, but I think we get it. The simplicity, I like that. Also, you've got youngsters. You know, I honestly, I remember sitting in front of a Victor Matfield, late 20s, interviewing him in depth and expecting him to share deep life principles with me. And then I realized suddenly, hold on, he's actually just been a very good player. I can't expect him to talk what Jacques could talk about because he's been around the mill, or Louis. We do expect too much from these youngsters because they're on the field. People look at them and they just expect they know life, but they don't. You guys play that role with them. Anything else you want to put on this list that you think you may have done to get the team to this point, other than praying a lot?
Thank you, Adrian. I think that what I would just add to the mojo concept or principle is that obviously the dictionary would define it in a certain manner. The specific definitions that we were really interested in is that it's a special magnetism, a special charm, a warmth, and then, of course, Scully mentioned the supernatural skill, which I really, really like. But then, of course, as time goes, we are able to add to that, and we can then add other words that would define mojo, or the other way around, that mojo would define it, and all positive and good connotations. But I think that what's important for us to realize as well is that as individuals, whether it be old or young, whether it be sportsmen or businessmen, in our lives, we have to take stock of our lives on a continual basis, probably on a daily basis. But we do have those watershed moments in our lives where we need to make sometimes very large paradigm shifts. We need to really make some big, bold decisions. Some people call them New Year's resolutions. Some people, call them just new sets of goals. But I think what is important for us to identify and to understand is that we go through life bragging and telling people, oh, I don't like this or I don't like that, and I don't accept this or that. But then, back at the ranch, we still tolerate those things. We still allow those things to have place or space in our lives. Mm. And when we make the bold decision, when we flip that switch and we make the decision and we act and we say that from this point on, I will no longer tolerate X, Y, or Z in my life. When that list changes and some of the things from this one list shift to the other side of the list, and we now have things that we don't only say we don't like or we don't accept, we now no longer tolerate these things and we've gone over into action. So I can't just say, well, I don't accept being late for work, but then I still allow myself to snooze and to lie in and things like that, or dawdle in the mornings. We need to go over into action. And when the buzzer goes off in the morning, we go over into action. We don't snooze anymore. We go over into action, and we've now shifted and moved from that thing that we still tolerated in our lives to things we no longer tolerate, and that we have now have almost a new set of values, and that the principles we apply are real, genuine principles to help us to move to the next level. Mm.
Yeah, I think it's a good summary. I just wanted to say, yes, Jock, it was quite complex actually. All these guys, doesn't matter us sitting around the table, whether they're 19, 20, 21, and we've obviously created a set of values. But the one thing you can go look into sports success is that these oaks who step to the foreground and are successful, even if it's on the little lowest level with us, there is a support base there in life. I don't want us to forget that. They stay individuals and just normal human beings, even though they've got a form of extraordinary skill. You can go look at the best people worldwide. You look at Rory McIlroy's story. There's a mom and a dad there that traveled to every extreme to make him the best. I mean, we understood Tiger Woods' story, and you can carry on with how many examples. And for me, that is central to any team environment, that the individuals in that environment has got to have one form or some form of a support base when they're out of your environment, because we spend time together, 4 hours a day maybe, gymming in a field session or a team meeting, etc. and so on. But then there is another 12 or 16 hours a day that they're not with you. Mm-hmm. And when those values go into an environment that supports those values as well, whether it's from 5 or 6 years old, then you get a real great individual.
Very good point there. So what are they, or who are they, or what are they like when they're not with the team? It's fine. I'm all mojo when I'm with a team. Yeah. But then back with my family, do I have mojo there? Or when I go out with my flipping student friends, and where we just drag each other's standards down so easily under the banner of fun, Do I show mojo there? You mentioned, I was going to go to the support structures very quickly before we start winding down, but the Tiger Woods and some of these extraordinary individuals, when their structures tumbled around them, maybe your father dies or something happens, who do you then become? What do you become? And is it entrenched in you? Or was it very much just attached to that individual? So again, these youngsters might be looking up at you as a coach and you as a support structure there, as a life coach, Jacques. But when you're not there, is it so entrenched that he goes home and he teaches this to his little boy if he's married and he's got it becomes part of his life? So that's very powerful. But I like the support structure. So let's not forget, you can have mojo attitude. You can have you know, value system and so on, but no one is teaching you how to offload that freaking ball. No one is teaching you to play as a unit and to have those technical skills. So you must have that in place, good technical input. I just saw a little bit. I'm not a rugby expert, but I could see that there's mojo in the offloads.
Yeah.
So technically, have you taken that to another level the last year or two?
Yeah, look, certain things that you coach in a technical way, or you decide that this is my team and this is how I would like them to be coached or play at, does take time though. So there's a certain element of those things that you saw in watching what you see that actually was implemented over an 18-month period, and not just initially in this campaign with these guys. And ultimately, that plan always comes together when confidence arrives on the table. So we had the same plan in week one and week two, you know, but you didn't recognize it there because it was still a side looking to find themselves and obviously dealing with the stresses of the competition. And as confidence comes, suddenly that plan looks brilliant, and you tell us as coaches, yes, coach, well done. You look like a genius, but it's not necessarily always the case. The plan is in place. It's just when these guys literally find themselves and the understanding of what they can do when it meets that confidence, then it becomes so easy to execute and so easy to watch.
Yeah. Adrian, I remember years ago seeing the winner, I think the Boston Marathon or the New York, some guy from Africa, and they asked him, you must have a passion for winning. He says, no, I have a passion for preparation. Mm. Now, Jacques, you'll know in karate too, we all have background there. You practice these dance things thousands of times. And now, I remember giving self-defense classes and you a couple of moves, and people think they can go away. And under pressure situations, I apply that.
Executed.
There's no way. I remember once I was in a slight situation, and I was taught boxing when I was younger. My dad was a professional at one stage, and then I used wrestling and rugby as a martial art. I'm joking. But jiu-jitsu as well, and a bit of judo, etc. But in this pressure situation, I found myself hitting with the left to the jaw just to stun somebody who was threatening me. I went back to my training 16 years ago at that time. Okay. So the point is that the training is so vital. So when you're under pressure, you react automatically. It's a beautiful principle. It applies spiritually. That's why you need to do these things daily basis.
Indeed.
We speak of leadership fitness.
Indeed.
Bernard, as well.
Right, James, last few minutes of the show. Before we, I just want your feeling on the Varsity Cup in general, and then from the level that you look at rugby in South Africa, maybe you have some thoughts and views. If you were sitting in front of the rugby union, what would you say to them? And if you want to reserve the right to say anything, then you're also welcome. But just, I think, any input. So if we got some of these guys to listen to our conversation here, what would your humble message be to them? But first, a message to parents.
No pressure, Esquali, no pressure.
Yeah, look, I've seen your social media platform, Adrian, so I'm pretty sure there's a lot of those guys on that. So you're executing me here.
Before we execute you, talk to parents who are serious about their kids playing rugby and who puts maybe too much pressure on them, and then they go to varsity. Just what would you say to parents who's got a very good, talented young rugby player based on all we discussed today? So what would you say to that mom and dad?
Look, it's not for me to judge. I'm also learning now what it is to be a parent and to be a good leader, judging myself every day to hopefully do a good job on that. But it sounds so basic, but please, please, make them enjoy it. The influence, or look, rugby is almost a religion, or it's not almost, it is a religion for most of us in this country, as some other forms of sport is for lots of people. But make it easy for them. Just let them put on their boots and just go and have fun. If it ultimately works out that there's an element of talent that can be unearthed, Then only then take it to the next level, and the next level would be just by paying attention to it and not even overdoing it, because ultimately that skill will develop in a natural way, and then you can get guidance from there. For me, there is so much pressure in South African school sport already, because schools has become a marketing tool against each other, and we want front page news, we want local news, we want to make it into to where the papers or the social media platform says that yes, we've done well. And ultimately that pressure translates to these kids. So for me, let's not kill the passion. Let's make it totally enjoyable for them. Because ultimately anything that you enjoy is something that you will want to master at the end in any case. I've not found the guy that said, listen, yes, I really enjoy this, but I want to stop. You don't stop. Then it's something that you enjoy, you constantly go. And it will be a natural progression for these kids. When they enjoy it, they'll come to mom and dad and say, listen, yes, mom, I need a new set of boots, and I maybe want to go and see if I can now, you know, train with this coach because he can improve whatever skill it is.
Jacques, well said, eh?
Absolutely. That was just perfect.
I mean, I couldn't say it better. If you enjoy something, you're going to want to continue with it. But if you feel all that pressure, the moment you have a gap to let it go, you will.
It's just that game-breaking, you know, it's a game-breaker, but, you know, passion does it. And I can't see real passion being maintained if there's not an excitement or an enjoyment in it. Applies for spirituality as well.
Okay.
So these people who are voluntary church workers, they can't perform if deep down they don't have a passion for what they do. The pressure will get to them. So I love that. Make them enjoy it. You guys reflect, though, a kind of enjoyment.
But I
think
really
it's very important.
We can turn it around because we've passed that. We've passed that advice. And to turn the tide back would be super difficult. The world we're in is so pressureful, and so brilliant advice, and hopefully it just, I don't know, it touches one principal at one school or a coach, or we can you know, get some parents to apply that. Jacques, anything you want to add there?
Yeah, I think the only thing I would add is just an experience I had with our youngest daughter, who's now in her final year of school in matric, and she was busy with a project and she asked for my help, and it's quite interesting. We came onto this subject of, you know, something that's missing, something that needs to be improved in our country, not only in our country, in the world. And the bottom line is that there's a famine. There's a famine in our land, and the famine is that there is a famine of leadership. And I mean from grassroots level, from the home, all the way up. And we know especially how important that is in the world today. And if we can all, as parents, as leaders of organizations, leaders in our communities, if we can just understand this one principle, and that is that we cannot afford to get in our cars and drive in reverse every single day of our lives looking in the rearview mirror. Because that's what we do. We're living in the past. Mm. We're repeating the past.
Expect different results.
And so the other thing I could add to that is that he who does not learn from history is bound to repeat it. It's a simple principle that I think we all understand. And you don't have to go and learn for yourself. You can learn from others. So that would be my message. And certainly that would be, you know, something that I would say in response to what Werner said, is that we need to take ownership and responsibility as leaders of our families and our homes, communities, leaders in organizations, and we need to apply this principle of authentic leadership and really engender those values that will make us good leaders.
Mm.
You cannot be a certain type of person off the pitch or at home or when you're with your friends in social circles and try and be this leader that is something that you read from some motivational book or heard in some speech.
No. Thank you so much, Jacques van Rennen. I think we're not going to destroy you by asking your opinion. We're out of time, so you might be very lucky. But ambitions. I know you can say you're just focusing on the job now. Your career is obviously coaching. So if Ackermann calls you tomorrow and says, I want you in the team, I mean, would you like to take your coaching career further? Because it's on a good wicket now. But you want to entrench it. You want to maybe win the ultimate cup this year or next year. How does the future look for you, Dan?
Look, Arden, I just first answer you in this way. 2 years back, I had the opportunity to work with Louis Kuhn, which I value as a great individual.
Kicking.
Yes. He's now currently high performance manager. And him being involved in our side, he helped us a bit defensively, et cetera, and so on. The one evening in a discussion, Being a young guy, you try and handle the pressure first, and not let it affect your decisions. And the one evening in the hotel, he took me and he said, "Listen, go stand in front of the mirror." And I thought I was a little bit confused. And he said, "Just go stand in front of the mirror and please tell yourself, why are you coaching? Because if you just measure it on trophies, you're not going to be a coach for very long." Because unfortunately in sport, doesn't matter if you win trophies, the English Premier League is a given example. In football, there's guys who win a trophy this year and six games into the new season, he's fired. And it's what it is. So to answer you, definitely, as long as the Lord put me in coaching, I'll take whatever next opportunity comes. But the driven reason for the opportunity would be to improve people and touch people's lives. I said to some of the players, and when we were in a bad scenario, I said, the only thing I want to achieve with you is if you're 50 years old and you sit at your house and you maybe have got your one grandkid running around there, when you plot your timeline for people around you, like in the historic way when they say BC, etc. and so on, and you take your date of birth and you plot it until that day, I just want a little highlight on that timeline that said the time that I spent at UJ was good for me. And then I achieved it, because ultimately you can't just assess coaching in terms of trophies.
Werner Jansen van Rensburg, the current coach for the UJ Varsity Cup team. And I think I sense intelligence, humility, passion, I don't know, just a lot of good qualities. And of course then we've got Jacques van Rienen, who's walking this road with him as a life coach, if I can call it that. Jacques and Werner, thank you for joining us today. It's been wonderful having you here, and I really hope that the team does well that the script works out this year.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It was just nice chatting. Thanks a lot.
And good luck with tomorrow's match against Wits Gielle Pakslaman.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you for the opportunity. That was wonderful.
Thanks so much. Louis Groenewald also here, the old man. And that was our Leadership Masterclass. Up next, the Business Masterclass with Richard Angus and the team. So please stay tuned. Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.